You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 21st of July, 2020. On the podcast today, Tim Zhu, investment associate at Arix Bioscience, and Tim talks about one of their portfolio companies, Amplyx Pharmaceuticals, which announced positive top-line data from its Phase 2 clinical trial. And talking about Phase 2 clinical trials, also on the podcast today, Vadim Alexander, head of healthcare at SP Angel, discusses Synergen, SNG, ticker there, of course, which rose by over 400% yesterday on top-line data from its Phase 2 clinical trial. Plus, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin price action and news. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of both of these, at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see a lot of other content, including something about 80 Energy, SP Angel Morning View, lots of videos there and podcasts. Check that out there. And also, our COVID-19 index, and the top riser in the COVID-19 index today is Omega Diagnostics, up 29%. That's the top riser. The biggest faller is Frontier IP Group, and that's down 8.5%. I think they did a fundraise yesterday, didn't they? So check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim Zhu, investment associate at Arix Bioscience, A-R-I-X is ticker. Tim, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here.
Yeah, nice to chat to you. Not chatted before. We've had Jonathan on the podcast many a time, and we're going to talk about news. There's been phase two results from Amplyx's drug, Fosmanogepix. Hope I'm saying that correctly, and we'll dig into that in a bit. But as always, Tim, if someone is not familiar with Arix Bioscience, just give us a brief summary as to what you're all about, please.
Sure. We're a life sciences venture company based out of London and also with offices in Munich and in the U.S. We invest in high-impact therapeutics, the drugs that can dramatically change patients' lives. We currently have a portfolio of about 15 companies, ranging from very early, so preclinical companies, all the way to companies with clinical data like Amplyx, which we'll discuss today. So I'm based out of our U.S. office, and I joined last summer. And my background's in medicine.
Excellent stuff. Okay, like I said, phase two results have been released for Amplyx's drug, which is fosmanogepix. Now, can you explain what this drug is, please, Tim?
Sure. And so oftentimes patients, after receiving chemotherapy, or they may receive a stem cell transplant for a blood cancer, they become immunocompromised, meaning their immune system is turned down, and they become victim to some of these opportunistic infections that can be really deadly. So Amplyx is working on two of these. One is a fungal infection known as Candida, and the other is a virus called BK virus. So what we're talking about today is their release of phase two data for their antifungal drug in candidemia. And so the results are pretty exciting for the field. So about 80% of the patients did well on the drug. So their infection was completely cleared. And 86% were alive at day 30. And this is a really sick patient population. So they're in the hospital. Typically their outcomes are not this good. We're very excited about the results and are looking forward to exploring the effect of the drug in a few other infections as well, such as aspergillosis.
Yeah, yeah. And so why is this drug better than existence of antifungal treatments, Tim?
Yeah, it's quite a complex field, as you might expect. And there's a few reasons why this drug is really needed right now. And the first is that oftentimes when these patients present with a fungal infection, they have very unspecific presenting symptoms. And what that means is you don't really know exactly if it's Candida or aspergillosis or a rare mold. And so there's a real need for a more broad spectrum agent. And that's what fosmanogepix provides. Another reason why this drug is needed is that the current drugs are not very safe or well tolerated. So one of the other drugs you may have heard of, amphotericin B, in medical school, we actually learn it as amphoterrible because these patients had developed kidney failure, and it's just a horrible drug to have to take. So what Amplyx's drug is able to do is provide that, hopefully provide that level of spectrum while being a very safe drug.
Okay, I understand. And can you explain sort of why anti-infectives are important, especially now, maybe during the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, anti-infectives have been put on the back burner by some of the pharma companies. And we're just learning today with COVID-19 how important these drugs are. As you may see in the news, there's a lot of work on vaccines and repositioning drugs to hopefully treat the virus. So I think what we're going to see in the coming years is a renaissance of interest in antifungals, antiviral therapies, these pathogens that have been traditionally very difficult to treat. You may know that HIV, hepatitis B, some of these viruses are just notoriously difficult to treat. We've known about them for decades and decades, and there's no cure. So I'm personally very glad that Amplyx is working on two of the toughest pathogens.
Okay, understood. And can you explain how the reimbursement and research landscape is changing for anti-infectives, please?
Sure. Lots of attention on anti-infectives, as I mentioned. One of the other concerns about this entire field has been some concern that these drugs cause resistance. And there's been some news recently in our field that 5 or 10 of the major pharma companies are putting together a $1 billion fund to address antimicrobial resistance. There's definitely a lot of attention being put here. Also, I would note that with COVID-19, There's actually a link with Amplyx's antifungal drug here. So what we're seeing is a lot of these patients have the pneumonia and they develop aspergillosis after the infection. So it's called a super infection. When their lung is super vulnerable and at risk of having a major infection like this. And so what Amplyx is actually doing right now is hoping to test fosmanogepix in that population as well to extend the potential use of the drug in the clinic.
Yeah, and so what's next for Amplyx?
Yeah, we are really excited about these initial phase two results in one of the main indications, Candida. And we're continuing, the company's continuing to run trials in a few other indications to expand the use. As we look ahead to potential partnerships with Big Pharma to commercialize the drug, there's a lot of excitement there as well. So more to come on what those future results will show and also how we'll get this drug to patients.
Excellent stuff. Every day, Tim, on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies. And obviously, someone has to hit that follow button on your page to get on that list, or several people. So if someone's listening to this now, likes the sound of what you're talking about, the progression you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. Well, it's like no other time in biotech and pharma right now. Everyone's eyes are on vaccines and treatments for COVID-19. And it's also a very strong year so far for IPOs in this sector. So very exciting time to be in this industry. I think a second reason is I am very excited to get up every morning and work with a really knowledgeable team with expertise in a lot of different areas. And we often spend months and months looking at these companies and really understanding the science and the potential clinical impact before we make an investment. And so I think our portfolio will continue to mature and provide returns for our investors.
Excellent stuff. Tim, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Sounds great. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel. You all right, Vadim?
How are you doing, Justin?
When I saw Synergen soaring yesterday, literally, I showed my mates, I look at that, and I took a screenshot. It was like 150% up. And they said, wow. And then about 5 minutes later, 250% up. Then 300%. And this is going nuts. And I thought of you there because I think one of the first times I've heard of Synergen when we started, I know we've been doing weekly calls, but we did do the odd monthly call. And one of the first times you came on, you mentioned Synergen. You said, like them, you held some stock. And I said, you know what, they're based, I know about them because I did read about them. And I said, I know they're based in Southampton. My son's got a sort of lung condition. We've been there. And so I said, I should invest because they're a local business. Then an area sort of I have interest in because of my son. I never did invest though. And yesterday, I think it finished, what, 500% up or something ridiculous?
Yeah. Big rise, big stock rise, definitely.
Now, I've got to ask you a question. Did 420% at the end. But I've got to ask you, did you have any stock yesterday while that rise happened?
Yeah, no. Unfortunately, I had, if you remember kind of our chat about this, whenever it was, I think it was about a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, I was trying to time my entry and so, yeah, no, I held the stock. I sold some at higher than the placing level. I think I sold some at 60p, kept a bit and sold some down later. I think what I was thinking at the time, and this is, you know, as with all trading strategies, it's always difficult to time your trading, but yes. I was still quite happy with my return because I'd got into this, at much lower levels prior to the whole COVID thing. But I guess the ultimate point here is, timing entry is always always difficult. The trial results were, they were close, I have to say. I'm a big believer in this stock. I'm a big believer in Interferon. I think I think the drug ultimately and the delivery strategy is quite interesting, and I think it will have a place going forward in many pulmonary viral infections. It's demonstrated to work against SARS-1 and MERS. It's why I like this stock all along.
Yeah, let me just point out.
But the trial results are always, it's always difficult to ride through with your entire holding a clinical readout. That's always the difficulty here. I mean, we know, you and I know, this is a case in point, you know. You and I know the dozens of stocks that have gone through phase three readouts, and the negative result is, you know, pretty damaging to the share price. The hope here was, you know, if you had a questionable result, the share price would adjust and it would be a great time to buy. But unfortunately, that never happened. This stock only kept going up. I mean, it had come back down to the placing price, which with their last placing price was about 35p. And that probably, you know, hindsight is 20/20, was a good time to buy. But look, ultimately, I still think, you know, so you know how I feel about the company. I think that not only do I like their...
let me ask you a couple of questions, right? First of all, they mentioned yesterday, they said that the patients who received SNG-0101 had a 79% lower risk of developing severe disease compared to placebo. And then they said patients who received that as well were more than twice as likely to recover from COVID-19 than those on placebo. So where are they at? Is this clinical phase two? Where are they at the moment?
Yeah, correct. Exactly. So this is it. Therein lies the problem, okay? Mm. But these are unique times, unique circumstances. Drugs may get accelerated, you know, approvals, and everyone's looking at any kind of solutions, right? So the early data is interesting. You know, it's the hope was always that it would generate good data, but I was always concerned about, you know, it's not a very big trial. There was only 100 patients in the trial, half of which were on placebo. So the drug's only really been, you know, in 50 patients. You know, the results, the p-values were just made the cutoff. The confidence intervals were quite wide on the primary endpoint. So, you know, it scraped by, quite frankly, but the effect was strong. So, you know, it's early days is what I would say. You know, we do need more data. We need a bigger trial. We need more patients.
I think if you look at the stats, I mean, it's hard to pin down because I know cancer drugs are a lot more risky. But the general stats are, isn't it, before clinical trials happen, there's between a 3% and 5% chance they get all the way through to at the end. And even when you're at phase three, it's something like 50-50, isn't it? Even at that level, it's still, you know, it's not a probable thing. It's not odds on. It's basically 50-50. So it's an even bet. So even now, but they did come out then and released something today, didn't they, saying that they had clarified phase two trial. As clearly stated, a phase two trial is designed to test efficacy of a drug and takes place before the drug is approved or able to be marketed. So they did say this in themselves. But again, though, it dropped a bit today and then it's gone back up again. So people are buying the dip here. It's up to £2.11. So when you were talking about your prices early, you did very well there, doubling your money and all that. But this is now £2.11. It's still going up.
Oh, so absolutely.
It's phenomenal.
Am I kicking myself for having got out a bit too early? Yes, I am. Of course I am. Therein lies the difficulty of, you know, timing your entry and exit. But you know, am I happy with my outcome? Yes, but definitely. I mean, look at the outcome. Do I think this could go much higher? Of course I do, because the current environment is very difficult to gauge. Right? It's extraordinary circumstances with you know, people like, you know, for example, Trump securing the global supply of remdesivir for the U.S. You know. Countries are acting very quickly ahead of any possible treatment before there's, you know, real substantial evidence that it works. You know, so you know, obviously this is a bit earlier still. You know, there is no regulatory approval emergency for emergency use or any other, you know, use currently. So we are a bit earlier than that, and you know, it's still early days. But you're absolutely right. You know, the share price. It keeps going up right now. The clarifying statement, I thought the presentation, just for investors to look at, it's worth looking at that presentation. The click-through is worth looking at. It was useful to see that because it gives you a bit more explanation on the results. But yeah, you know, it is a product of its time right now. You know, this time is very difficult. Circumstance of the pandemic is what's leading to any kind of data is generating major share price moves. And so there you go. So that's I think that's really, really what's behind the massive spike in the share price. But yeah. Don't get me wrong. You know, I still like Interferon. I think it has a place in this. And it just needs more data. We need bigger trials. And, you know, now the company's in a good position to do that. You know, they'll continue doing their work. They'll certainly will be doing more work on this. I don't see an approval on a 50-patient, you know, treatment. As in, like, you know, I just can't see them getting an approval on a 100-patient trial where it's been tested on 50 patients, right? Yeah. So you may see some dialogue with the regulators. I certainly hope to see more data come out, and I think they will be. My hope just on this in particular was treatment earlier in the patient pathway, so less severe patients in that, you know, and I think they are doing that with, they have a 200-patient community-based trial going on. So there's further data to come. And that's where I would expect to see a better signal in terms of its efficacy.
But I'd just be saying to anyone, why are you buying up here, though? I mean, I mean that was the big move, you know, massive move. And if you look at the chart, what's called a relative strength index, RSI, you can only get to 100, and above 70 is called overbought. It's now at 94. So it's really burning up here. You know, it's when you see a rocket go to the atmosphere and starts burning up.
Yeah.
And we did hit 240 and it's come back to 210 even now with the rally. So I can see, I'm not saying it'll drop out of the sky, but I can't see it going high and hitting those previous highs until they get it's gone so nuts. I think even phase three. A pass here wouldn't go higher because it's nuts. I think that everyone's bought is bought.
It's like it is very difficult. I agree with you. It's very difficult to buy at these levels, and there will be turbulence for sure.
Let me ask you a question as well, though.
This is early days in terms of the data. They don't have that much data, quite frankly.
I've heard that some of these bigger sort of companies like AstraZeneca and all that. If they produce a vaccine, it's going to be at cost anyway, isn't it? They said they're not going to make a profit on it because that's the whole thing. The world needs it. We're in a desperate situation. So where do they stand on this? Will they be making a profit or somewhere along the line? Or will they be doing the same as AstraZeneca and saying we're just going to do it at cost, really?
I have no idea. I mean, there hasn't been any discussion about commercial launch or anything like that. I don't know what their company's position will be. I can't imagine them doing this at cost.
No, because they're a small company. Exactly, they need the money. Yeah, they need the money. So AstraZeneca is different. They make billions anyway. But I suppose a small company, you can't begrudge them the amount of work and effort they put into this drug. You know, they have to earn some money from it, don't they? You know,
if you know the strategy, almost certainly will be some kind of a larger partnership. You know, if the data comes through. But you know, we're nowhere near that. There's work to be done here to demonstrate that this actually does take the heat out of the death rate of this drug, of this virus. You know what I mean? These are early days. Look, it's a good sign. Share price is up. No one can complain about that. It's been a good day for British biotech, if you like. And that's causing, you know, there will be positive, I'm convinced, spillovers into other stocks. And it's a good day for AIM investors and UK investors. Yeah. But you're right. I think there will be some turbulence ahead. You know, it may have overshot in the short term. Certainly the data is early days.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest mistake investors make, private investors, is that they chase the price. Every now and again, you can see a rise happen, and you can see a rise by 100%, and you can chase it, and it'll go higher. Synergen is one of those examples. I've seen it happens once, twice a year, maybe, where you'll see a double in the morning, and it'll do a double again in the afternoon. Doesn't happen very often. So the chances are you buying a stock that's up 100% already and it going higher are very slim. You know, it's very few and far between. So you're better off, if you'd like the company, like I said, just waiting, because you may have to wait a week, a month, whatever, but it'll come back. And, you know, and Synergen was that rare example where you could have bought it at 100% up and you've still made a good bit of money. But it doesn't happen very often. It's very rare, you know?
No, I agree with you. And that was yesterday morning. That was the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
The moment
I saw it. Do you know, I read the RNS. And I thought, oh, I like that. That's good. And then it opened up almost 90% up. And I thought, oh, okay. No, I'm not. And then history is one of those situations where I didn't buy 90% up. I thought, how far is it going to go? And I was wrong. It went up to 500%. So there you go.
Yeah.
If I did that more often, though, I'd get burned. If I chased prices, I wouldn't make any money. So that's the trouble.
It's true. It's very difficult. Look, trading strategies are always difficult. We had one, me personally, I had one. It worked for the early days of the stock rise. And I'm kicking myself for not having stayed in. I did okay. Could have done a lot better, but that's what trading is, right? It's always hard to time these things. But your ultimate point is I agree with you 100%. It's very hard to buy at these levels right now today. It may very well continue, and there probably will be good news still to follow, but there might also be some further turbulence in the new in the data. And it is the ultimate facts are this is a very small trial, and it's very early days in determining whether this works or not. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I agree with you. It's difficult to buy at these levels.
Yeah,
it's more sensible to wait for some form of a correction, never come, and so be it. But the balance of probability is that you should probably wait.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's always opportunities out there. And listen, the oldest adage in the stock market is buy low, sell high. It's not to buy high, try and sell higher, because sometimes it doesn't go much higher. Synergism is Synergism is an exception, but it gives people false hope that these kind of things happen every day. They don't happen every day.
They don't.
No,
it's marvelous. True. It's true.
Okay, cheers, fella. Well, listen, we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman, and he is an author. He's also a journalist, and he's been on telly and all that stuff. And he also trades Bitcoin. The crypto trader is your thing, isn't it? When did you start actually trading? When's the first time, Glenn, you traded crypto? Do you remember?
I believe it was in 2013, all the way back in 2013, Justin.
Okay.
It doesn't seem
a long time ago, but it's 7 years now. That's nuts. It seems like it's around the corner, but it's slipped by time. As we get older, it goes faster, apparently. That's what my father told me. Thanks, Dad. I remember it's 26th birthday. I said, do you know what? I feel like I'm getting old now. I'm getting towards my 30s rather than my teens. And he said, yes. And do you know what? As you get older, time goes faster. Oh, cheers, Dad. Thanks for that. It's a really happy thought.
My grandmother said much the same thing. She was practically on her deathbed at that point, and she just kind of looked bewildered and said, time just, as you get older, it just goes so fast, and then it's gone. Yeah. I was like, oh, my Lord.
I'm looking at Bitcoin, right? We just had a chat.
Let's get on something more cheerful.
Yeah, maybe breaking out, you say. Now, I can see today or last 24 hours, I was, is at one, or just close to 2%. So it doesn't seem a major breakout, but I see the RSI is going up. But it's not above any. But it's been sideways now, hasn't it? Up and down, but it's been 10,000. To 9,000, pretty much up and down. So it's at 9,003 now. I can't see a convincing breakout here, is it?
Really? The line I had drawn on my charts, the sort of trend line, has been broken. But I obviously, this being a podcast, I can't show you where that line is. But if you look at the high on about the 10th of June, where it was at about 10,000.
I can see,
and then draw a line all the way down to sort of this morning, then you can see that, at several points the price hits that line over and over again. So that's the line I've been going with.
What time frame do you look at then? On the chart? What time frame?
On an hourly chart, you can see it quite clearly. So it's a short-term trend.
Oh, okay, so the hour,
short-term trend line was broken.
Now it's popped up. Yes, I was on a daily. On daily, it's nothing there.
It's nothing on a daily. Exactly, it's still far too early. But
that's because you're a dirty day trader. You see, I'm more of a longer term.
Well, I'm not a day trader, but I try and get into longer term trades. But sometimes I will look at a shorter term chart, like an hourly chart, to pinpoint the exact point where I want to get in to a trade that I hope will then run for days, weeks, or even months. That's the kind of sort of multiple time frame analysis, they sometimes call it, don't they? But anyway, the point is, by the time that this podcast goes out, this may be a bigger story. The price, this little breakout may have become somewhat bigger, or it may just be a damp squib. Obviously, the people listening have an advantage over me.
That's the trouble with Bitcoin, you see. You see, when this podcast goes out, it's going out this afternoon, it's now quarter to 11. So it was not that far away. We're a couple of hours, this will be out, really, 1 o'clock somewhere. So
Or it could be up a lot further. This is my early warning, but nobody can hear it until the podcast goes out.
So it's an early warning just to you, Justin. Or it could drop 40%. You never know of a Bitcoin, you know?
Well, that's why you have stop losses, or I do.
So are you in now?
Yeah, I got in. But, you know, obviously I'm not holding up a great deal of hope, because as with any trade, whether it's Bitcoin or anything else, breakouts sometimes work and sometimes they don't. It's throwing mud at the wall, as somebody once put it, and seeing what sticks. That's what you do in trading. You try a bunch of different stuff, see what works, and the ones that work make you a lot of money. And the ones that don't work, you have a stop loss in place, cut your losses so that you never get any big losses, just little losses. That's how I trade. That's how most professional traders trade. Obviously, somewhat different from a fundamentals investing perspective, which would be more up your street.
Yeah. Hey, you stay away from my street. What level did you get in?
I got in just above the breakout, so just below 9,300. Okay. So the breakout point was at about $9,250, that is. Yeah. So I got in just above that. So I'm in a small profit currently, but we'll see where it goes. As I say, I've got a stop loss in, so the worst that can happen is I break even. Just always nice.
Well, the thing is, there's a different thing. I was talking to a friend of mine. We both invested in a company called Gfinity, and he doubled his money a bit. And he sold. He said, "Should I sell the other bit?" I said, "Well, listen. At the moment, if you're going on old money, this is a risk-free trade for you. You know, you sold half. I mean, every investment is about risk and reward. You know, what can you lose? What can you gain? Now, hopefully, you know, the upside should be multiples. The downside could be 100%. Obviously, the upside can be several 100%. So I said, you know, looking on that basis, I wouldn't sell all, because if it keeps going, you know, one thing you should never do, really, you should always try and limit your downside, but never limit your upside. And if you can put a stop loss in, so I said, at the moment, yeah, by all means, limit downside, so you won't lose all that money. But, you know, there's a long way to go. We may have a bit of a pullback, because it's rallied very strongly. But longer term here, we've gone from a sort of downtrend into uptrend. It's broken 200-day moving average. It looks good. But, you know, it may be a bit of volatility. But don't never limit your upside, because that's you can have one stock to transform your portfolio. You know, it can do it. And it has, actually. This stock, they put a bit, well, a couple of mates put a bit in there, and they were having a bad time because of COVID, this portfolio. And that one stock pretty much has brought them back to break even or even in profit, you know? So never limit the upside, always limit the downside.
Exactly. It's the famous Pareto rule. You get 20%, you know, 20% of instances of whatever the thing is account for 80% of successes in the case of trading. So it's like 20% of your trades will account for 80% of your profits, would be a sort of a typical outcome as per the Pareto rule.
It's hard to find a perfect one, isn't it? I mean, do you know what? When I'm investing, you know, every now and again, I get a stock and I get bored, and so I go into stocks that I shouldn't have really gone into. But every now and again, one looks right. And on this one, the fundamentals, like the chart was good because it hadn't broken out anywhere, but it was starting to turn up. We'd seen a bottom, then a higher low, and it was all so well. And I said, when those come along, go big at the start and then de-risk a little bit when you've done well. But then stick with it, because they don't come along very often. That's it. You have to really, you know, cash in on the ones that do well. You have to learn to do that, you know, and then obviously just try and just minimise losses on the ones that don't go so well, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's, I mean, actually, I did that the other way around with Tesla. You remember last week I was telling you about how I shorted Tesla at the top, just as it was starting a sort of, well, what we now know as probably just a correction rather than any massive crash. But the point is, I shorted it at the top. The profits were good. I made good profits as it went down and down and down. But then I closed half my position to take some of those profits. So I locked in profits on half my position. And then as the trade began to peter out, in other words, the price sort of stabilized somewhat, I then took some more of my profits. But I left about a third of the position open, let the price jiggle about a bit. And then finally yesterday, after a week of the price jiggling around, it suddenly sort of broke out to the upside, and I had a stop loss in, and so my whole position was closed at that point. So I made profits, as it turned out, on all parts of the position, but I'd allowed you know, an extra, I'd allow the last third of the position to have more room to move around, to go up, to go down, to do whatever. Though finally, you know, Tesla decided to recover, and the price, I mean, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, Monday, the price recovered incredibly strongly. So I'm really glad that I had that stop loss in and I closed the last portion of my trade. But yeah, that's pretty much the way to do it. You lock in some profits after a big move, as your friend did there. And then, you know, the idea is to allow at least a portion of your trade to continue, because particularly on the upside, rather than when you're doing a short like I was, the upside is infinity, as we've seen with companies like Amazon and so on.
Yeah,
so
I'm
people
surprised.
Who traded Amazon, you know, 10 years ago, most of them closed their trades after making a certain amount of profit, and they'll be kicking themselves. They, you know, ideally they would have left at least a third of their initial position open to make multiples and multiples of their initial capital.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm sort of surprised and not surprised. I mean, Tesla was going nuts, of course, towards the upside. But that's because of strong momentum, and it's like a trend, a trending stock, you know, momentum is there, very strong. But you went against trend there, didn't you, to short that because of obviously temporary short-term a rally had become ridiculous, I suppose.
But it was a couple of things you'll remember. It was the gap up. This is last Monday we're talking about. The price gapped up. It opened on Monday morning far higher than it closed on the Friday night, and that's usually a sign of a frenzy of trading. So I thought maybe this is the top because there's a real frenzy, but also the volume was very high. When you get a peak, you know, a little or a big spike in volume, particularly after a gap up like that in a parabolic shaped, you know, chart rise, then to me those signals were enough that it was probably going to crash that day, which it did. But obviously, again, I had a stop loss in, so if I was wrong and the price actually had carried on going up, then I would have been stopped out of the trade with only a small loss. So again, it's the risk reward thing. It's just shorting is not something I do very often by any means, only when I kind of get a really strong signal like that. Probably only a few times a year I actually do a short on a stock like that.
Yeah, yeah, because let's be honest, the trend has been monstrous, hasn't it, and on that stock,
yeah.
And the momentum is like scary. So if you get it wrong, like, say, if you don't put a stock, I can imagine people have been burned shorting that because they've tried their best to short it. And there's one thing you see almost people, you know, professional sort of traders shorting a stock, you know, and big time, and then burning themselves, not putting stop losses in. I think, are you insane? Because that the momentum, it's cult-like following, you know, Tesla. And it's like people just buy every single dip, pretty much. Every now and again, of course, it'll go overbought to the point where, you know, you think it's got to burn out a little bit, even for the next couple of days or so. But then it resumes trend because you've got some people buying the dip again. So it's a scary
sooner or later, it'll, you know, it'll have a proper collapse because they always do, obviously.
Well, it's valued at $304 billion. It's like,
yeah.
What? Which is nuts, you know, selling nowhere near the most cars in the world, but yet it's valued, you know, higher than any other motor manufacturer, which is nuts. Cause people think it's the future of everything, from electric to battery to automated driving.
Exactly, but they don't take into consideration what analysts of the sector constantly tell them, which is that, have you not noticed that all the European car makers are becoming really good at doing electric cars now as well? So it's not like Tesla's out there on its own doing something unique anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, having said that, I still expect Tesla to be a big winner in the long term. But along the way, like any massive stock like Amazon or whoever, you're going to get a big, big correction at some point of, say, 50% decline, something like that. It's bound to happen because it always does whenever there's this much hype around something. It's exactly the same with Bitcoin. People in 2017 said, oh, Bitcoin can't collapse because, look, everybody loves it so much. It's got so many cheerleaders, just like Elon Musk has got his cheerleaders. But sooner or later, the opposite happens and everybody turns against it and every news story is bad. And, you know, every news story you read, say, in a year's time, I'm guessing, it will be about Elon Musk saying something stupid.
Elon.
Elon Musk. Saying something stupid, doing something stupid. You know, the news cycle will just turn itself on its head like it always
but
does.
But also, the higher the share price goes, you know, the higher the risk, you know, less reward. It's got to keep going up. So it just at the end, it will literally have a massive collapse of, you know, tens of percent, not just a couple of, and then obviously a little go sideways for a while or something, because, yeah, it gets a stage where it's, you know, everything's been priced to perfection. If it gets everything right, then it should be valued at that level. But this, it's not going to get everything right. It's not going to have the entire market, is it? You know, like no. I said, there's the European car makers, BMs, Mercedes. They're all coming to the fray soon. And yeah, there we are. But okay, what happened? Do you see the old Bitcoin scam?
Yeah, the Twitter hack.
I thought that would have some kind of effect on the price, but it obviously didn't. I mean, nothing to do with Bitcoin, of course. I mean, people say, you know, what people mistake is that Bitcoin has never been hacked. You know, Twitter accounts have been hacked. It's like hacking a bank account. You know, you can't say that a dollar's been hacked, but you can say someone's account, money account, has been hacked and someone's nicked dollars from it. But that's the same with Bitcoin. So it's never been hacked, I suppose. But did it have any effect at all?
Your Bitcoin only gets nicked if you give them your password, pretty much. It's pretty much the way it
but
works.
I just think it's ridiculous how people got into this. So many high-profile accounts like that, and then someone got hacked into them, obviously. Do we know what it was, though?
It was definitely employees. Twitter have confirmed that. They haven't gone into that much detail yet about exactly how their employees got tricked, but you know, clearly they were actually tricked by a sophisticated hacker group who are allegedly a group of young people in their teens. But I like the way that the New York Times describes them as a sophisticated hacker group in their teens. Yeah. That's what we're generally dealing with, isn't it? So somehow they hijacked Twitter's servers via information that had been left on Twitter's internal Slack channel, presumably after they were granted access by an unwitting employee. That's what's believed to have happened. And so then they were able to grab hold of the Twitter accounts, the official Twitter accounts of all those famous people. It was Bill Gates, Barack Obama, Elon Musk, as you insist on calling him.
And they had Elon Musk as well.
And Elon Musk too, Michael Bloomberg, Kanye West, and left those messages saying, you know, what was it, you'll double your Bitcoin if you transfer
Time to give something back. Yeah, time to give something back. Whatever you send to us in Bitcoin, we'll double it. So, anyone with half a brain, people were scammed at that. Like, people fell for that. I can't believe that. Can you? Because why would you need to send?
Yeah, but if it comes from the official verified account with a blue tick.
Care. It's Bitcoin. It's like, why would Apple
It doesn't
be
matter if, like, why, if,
no,
if
it's Bitcoin.
If actual it's like, Bill Gates, and you know it's him because it's got his blue tick, and he's saying to you, I'm going to double your Bitcoin because I'm in a good mood today or whatever, then obviously they're
I would have thought straight away.
It's actually him, or it appears to be actually him.
No. What simple person? I can't believe those persons deserve to be hacked.
I don't think so.
That's stupid. Bill Gates. First of all,
Because it's a proper blue tick account.
Anything linked to Bitcoin is a scam like that. Why would Bill Gates be sending out Bitcoin?
I don't know why, but if it comes from Bitcoin, his Twitter account,
why would Apple be sending out Bitcoin?
Kanye
it's Bitcoin.
West saying the same. Kanye West, the rich people have decided to hand out some money today.
Kanye West maybe because people are following him idiots anyway, and he tweets a lot of idiotic stuff. He's off his head, and
Elon Musk. You could believe him doing that because he does crazy stuff for attention.
But first of all, why would he? What's the reasoning behind send me some Bitcoin and I'll double it? Why that?
Yeah, okay, I take your point about that bit. That is classic scam. that is the kind of.
So first of all, the Bitcoin is a big red flag. Then you happen to send them Bitcoin, and then the association of Apple with Bitcoin, it doesn't work. Bill Gates with Bitcoin doesn't work. Maybe with Elon Musk, maybe he's more techie. But again, why are you sending him? He doesn't need to have a receipt. Or, you know, it could be like, if it was him, he could say, so I know your address, send me 0.001 of a Bitcoin. Doesn't need a, you know, whatever you send, I'll double. That's such a classic scam.
That is classic. But, you know, to be fair, not that many people fell for it. Considering the enormous followings that these people have, $120,000 worth of profits. $120,000 is a massive failure, really, because the amount of planning that must have gone into it. But actually, kudos to Coinbase, for example, one of the big Bitcoin sellers, because them and the other major Bitcoin exchanges and cryptocurrency exchanges got onto this very, very quickly, within about a minute of the first exchange tweeting, we've got a problem here. All the other exchanges had pretty much locked down the transfer of Bitcoin to those suspect addresses. They stopped it from happening. So, you know, $120,000 worth got through, but then everything else was blocked. Many hundreds of thousands of dollars of attempted Bitcoin transfers by unwitting victims were blocked by the exchanges. And so luckily, those people didn't lose their money. $120,000 worth of Bitcoin lost. It's bad for those people, but it's not the end of the world, is it?
They deserve it. They're that stupid. They shouldn't be in charge of any money or any accounts or anything. So because they're a danger to themselves and other people. They really are. I can't believe how they're so simple. Really can't. Absolutely. Anyway.
I can't wait for you to fall for a sophisticated hack so I can...
That is not a sophisticated hack.
So I can quote your words back at you.
That is not... If I fall for a sophisticated hack, fair enough. That is not a sophisticated hack. Send me Bitcoin, we'll send you double.
It's pretty sophisticated to send the messages from those famous people's Twitter account.
I would have seen that and I said, that's been hacked. I saw it previously on someone, and they had been hacked. I saw an account, and it was out of character completely. And I thought, that's been hacked, really. And it turns out they were hacked. I can't remember what it was now, a couple of years back. But it was like something ridiculous they said, but some people probably believe it. But anyway, anything else? Anything else we're chatting about Bitcoin?
Yeah, there's a few other things on.
Just 2 minutes.
All right, little things. Right, first of all, the chief executive of Binance, which is currently the world's biggest cryptocurrency exchange.
Is it for bisexuals?
It's
we arrange loans for bisexuals, Binance.
And he's basically said much the same as what I've been saying for weeks, which is that the Bitcoin price is very closely tied into global stock markets. Though having said that, in the last few weeks, the prices have been diverging a little bit. Yeah, he's copying me. The prices have been diverging somewhat in the last few weeks. So the correlation between stocks and Bitcoin isn't quite as tight as it was before. But nonetheless, he's still saying, you know, clearly there's a link between the two, and that when people panic, they cash in all their investments, including Bitcoin. But then he says people should not take the description of Bitcoin as a safe haven asset too literally. But at the same time, he's saying with so much fiat money now flowing around after being printed by all the central banks, then the safe haven properties of Bitcoin will come through over time. So he's saying, you know, don't expect Bitcoin to rocket immediately, but in the long term, it will be considered like gold to be a safe haven, is basically what he's saying. A couple of other quick stories. Institutional demand for Bitcoin, which is always considered, you know, the next stage of Bitcoin's evolution. If Bitcoin's going to become a big deal, then obviously the big investment institutions and banks and so on need to start buying it in order to push the price up. Well, that is happening to a degree now. Grayscale, who are the biggest crypto asset manager, have announced their latest figures. They saw record inflows of almost $1 billion into their funds for the second quarter, which was nearly double the previous quarterly high of just half a billion dollars, which was for the first 3 months of the year. So the second quarter, almost $1 billion went in. That's a very good sign. I mean, it's still only a tiny fraction of Bitcoin's overall market cap, which is around $100 billion or in almost into the hundreds now. But, you know, so it's still just a fraction. It shows a pretty good sign there that institutional interest is growing up to $1 billion for that quarter as opposed to $500 million for the previous quarter. One last thing, Ethereum is worth watching again because it's beating Bitcoin not just in price terms, it's been doing very well in price terms this year, but also the number of transactions occurring on Bitcoin is growing very, very fast. And the number of active Ethereum addresses is growing at nearly twice the rate of Bitcoin's. And this is partly because of a revolution in what's now called DeFi, which is distributed decentralized finance. Basically, people taking the cryptocurrencies they already own and depositing them in these new DeFi institutions, and they get interest on their cryptocurrency savings, as it were. So they put their coins in there, and then they get paid interest. That's how it works, and it's quite successful so far because there haven't been any massive scandals surrounding it. I'm not saying there won't be at some point, because a lot of these institutions that people are putting their money with are unregulated. So who knows when the first one will go belly up and everybody will panic and take their money out. But at the moment, it's going well anyway.
We'll double the interest of any other, you know, whatever. We'll give us money, we'll double your money. We'll double your Bitcoin money. That's the interest we pay, 100% over a year. That's the kind of thing. The same people who went for that scam on Twitter.
Talking of which, on the same subject, the UK government is now considering regulating Bitcoin adverts. About time, really, isn't it? Because there are so many scam adverts.
I've seen so many adverts from people like, what's the chef, Gordon Ramsay, all these people now.
Yes.
He's given up cooking. He's now trading in Bitcoin and all that stuff, and he'll show you that kind of nonsense. It's ridiculous. Click here and I'll show you how. Somebody, a mate of mine actually sent me that advert. Is this real, do you think? Because it's not real. He's a multimillionaire chef. He's always just like Bitcoin trading. Anyway.
They always, in those adverts, they always say, Gordon Ramsay was talking on This Morning. They're always on This Morning. He was telling Philip and Fern, who couldn't believe their ears when he told them how much money he's made on Bitcoin.
Marvellous. Glenn, gotta go. And Tom's caught up with us again. I don't know why. Yeah. That's a ridiculous thing. But have a nice week. Speak next week.
All right, see ya.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Non-Standard Finance, up 16% to 7.3 pence. At four, Okio Pharmacorp, that is, up 8.6% to 10.75 pence. At three, Landor Resources, up 8.5 to 1.275. At two, Omega Diagnostics, like I said, up 29%. Pretty much 30%, 63 pence. And at one, Synergen, which I talked about with Vadim on the podcast today. It's up again today after a 420% rise yesterday. It's up again another 8.4% to 206 pence. I don't know how long it's going to burn a trial like that for, but it can't be long. It's got to burn out soon. Have a pullback. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Most read and most liked. At five, Thor Mining, field sampling results, US uranium and vanadium. At four, Live Company Group, Israeli opening and powdered ham contract. At three, Tizian Life Sciences, director appointment. At two, Bidstack trading update. And at one, Riabol Resources update on Romania well flow test operation. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.